I know you want to get back into the dating scene, and I think that's amazing. But the most important relationship I want you to be harnessing is the one that you have with yourself, because that's the most important one you're ever going to have. You know, you are, if we are looking to our partners to complete us, like, I hate that Jerry Maguire scene where it's like, you complete me. It's like, I want to just choke her, because, you know, you have to, nobody completes you except yourself. Welcome back to the Better Podcast with yours truly, Dr. Stephanie Estima. This show is for high performing women who want better bodies, better minds, better relationships, better sex, and better families, and want to hear from a woman that can take the complex science and make it easy to integrate into everyday life. Every week, I'll be giving you access to world-class scientists, medical doctors, plastic surgeons, professional athletes, Olympic gold medalists, Hollywood actors, parenting coaches, sex experts, and psychologists. I am always looking to answer this question. What are the simplest things that we can do today to get better tomorrow? I am part geek, part magic, and it is my mission to be the voice for women. Let's get better together. This is AMA Ask Me Anything number 3 with my partner in crime, the Major. And this one was really, really heavy. This was probably one of my favorite AMAs we've ever done. So we had so many topics that we covered. And of course, you know that I went on a nerd rabbit hole on a geeky magic carpet ride in terms of the prep for this AMA. And if you want to get the show notes, my prep notes for today's AMA, all you have to do is go to bettershow.co/show notes. That's SHOWNOTES. And what you're going to get is basically science-backed resources for better living. And you're going to get my notes. You're going to get the studies that I have referenced in today's AMA. You're going to get my personal best practices, what I've learned, how I implement. And we're also going to include some of Major's best practices as well, because they were just awesome. So bettershow.co/show notes. And we will very happily provide you with all the nerdy data that we know our audience loves. So my topics with Major today, we had questions on how to eat based on how do female hormones influence dieting? How do female hormones influence weight loss? So we talked about how hormones actually rule metabolism, period, and especially because of your period. So we talked about how to eat based on your menstrual cycle, a little bit of training on your menstrual cycle as well. We talked about endometriosis and fasting. So I'm just coming off of a 72-hour fast at the time of this recording, and so many questions on my social around endometriosis and fasting. So we did a deep dive into what endometriosis is, what type of nutrition we can follow if you do suspect that you have endo, and fasting protocols as well. We talked about the carnivore diet. This is another hot one. A carnivore diet for women, and the APOE4 gene. So talking a little bit about altered lipid metabolism with APOE4 and how to eat around that polymorphism. We also talked about, there was a specific question from Terry who was asking, she did keto, lost all this weight, and then as you'll see in the question, it goes into a lot of detail, basically has gained most of it back. She can't stop her hunger. Her hunger is driving her nuts. She was able to come off the, you know, oral contraceptives and whatnot, and now is just famished all the time. So we talked about what could possibly be going on with her. And then we got into a really great conversation around dating, and we got into a great conversation around medications that can cause weight gain. So the one question, as you'll see shortly, was a woman who wanted to get back into the dating world. And so we talked about certain medications that she's on that may be causing her to gain weight. So we talked about mindset around that. We talked about lifestyle factors. We talked about which medications in general across the board help us gain weight and ruin our metabolism. And then Major was talking about some of the strategies that she loves to employ as the president and also member of the Single Ladies Club, which she wears very proudly, and talking about some strategies for meeting new people and this journey of personal discovery. And then we finished it with morning routines, evening routines, and weekly routines. So I talked about some of the morning routines that I adhere to every single day, evening routines that I adhere to every single day, and then The other thing that we talked about, which I think is really juicy, is what happens when things go awry. You have just the worst morning, like you wake up and you just don't feel like it. So how we can hack into our biology and how we can reset ourselves and change our state, change our story so that we can get back into our morning and evening routine. So just a really robust conversation. I thought this was great. We went again, didn't get to all the questions. We're going to record the follow-up to this in the coming weeks. So this should be coming shortly to the podcast as well. But without further ado, please enjoy the AMA number 3 with myself and Stephanie Major. One of my goals this year is to make it my best year ever with my skin. And one of the ways that I'm doing that is with the Boncharge Red Light Neck and Chest Mask. Wrinkles, acne, scarring, skin roughness, loss of collagen and elastin happen in the face and in the neck and the décolletage area on our chest where the skin is very thin and susceptible to skin damage. I think at this point we're all pretty good about putting sunscreen on our face, but so many of us miss the neck and the chest area too. I use the Boncharge neck and chest mask daily for about 10 minutes in the morning while I'm checking emails. Their red and near infrared light waves together penetrate up to 5 to 10 centimeters below the skin surface. The red light reaches the skin's top layers, and the NIR light targets the deeper tissues without UV exposure. And that's going to help reduce the fine lines, wrinkles, and to help ramp up collagen and elastin production. So I want you to head over and have your best skin with me this year. Go to boncharge.com/better. That's BETTER. And use the discount code BETTER at checkout. And that's going to give you 15% off your entire cart. Transform your health and fitness with the Carol Bike, the smartest, most effective exercise backed by science. You can experience unparalleled results in just a minimum of 15 minutes per week. per week, thanks to AI personalized workouts tailored to your age and your fitness level. You will increase fat loss, train up your strength and your speed, and have better energy, something that every woman, including myself, absolutely covets. I always say that women are the original biohackers. If there's a way for us to feel better and look better, we are all over it. Carol Bike, in my opinion, is one of the best pieces of cardio equipment that you can invest in. Studies prove that Carol helps you achieve a 12% increase in cardio fitness, lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and reduces blood pressure by 5% in as little as 8 weeks. Begin your transformation with the Carol Bike today and enjoy $100 off using the promo code BETTER for our beautiful Better Podcast listeners. That's BETTER. All you have to do is visit carolbike.com. All right, here we are back with another AMA. I got my partner in crime here, Major, with me. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's always better when we're together. We just spent 3 weeks apart, which I think is the longest that we've ever gone. So
the worst.
The worst. Yeah.
I was texting and I was like, hi.
Do you remember me?
Do you remember me? Do you remember our friendship?
Unforgettable. So I'm really excited about our AMA today. It's the perfect way for us to be reunited. Mm. You've been doing something interesting this week. Let's tell the listeners what you've been up to.
Oh, well, we're going to go TMI right away here. So this is my bleed week. This is my first week of my period. And what I like to do, and we're going to talk a little bit about this today, is I like to do fasting. If I'm going to do any sort of aggressive fasting, tends to be this week. And we'll talk about why that is later on. But I just finished, so yesterday evening, just finished a 72-hour fast. So that was, and the type of fast that I did, and there's lots of different ways, but the type of fasting that I did this time was just a pure non-caloric liquid fast. So that means only water, herbal tea, my chocolate herbal tea, my fasting teas, that I love to drink, and salt. And I will say I did allow myself one cup of coffee in the morning. So one cup of black coffee, which, is still considered, in my opinion, non-caloric. So yeah, 72 hours was in deep ketosis, was great.
Yeah, you were a level 8, and we'll explain what a level 8 is to people, but we have these keto sticks that we blow on that read the acetone, correct?
Yeah, the acetone levels in the breath. That's right. Yes. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes, because it's a product that it's so easy. It's so much better than bleeding all the time. Because mm-hmm. if any of you know anyone who's a type 1 or type 2 diabetic, you know that they're constantly finger pricking to read their blood glucose. You can also do that. You can read your ketones as well, but it's like, no, I can't. So this is just like a 10-second, you blow into this little machine. It reads your acetone levels and then it spits out a number from, I think it's 1. I don't think it goes to 0, but 1 to 8.
Yeah.
1 being very low, not in ketosis. And then there's a stepwise increase from there where 8 is the maximum. And I did it. I was there at day 2. So like around 48 hours into the fast, I was blowing like the maximum amount of ketones in.
Yeah. I've been trying to get to an 8, and I've convinced myself that 8 actually was a myth and didn't exist and it was impossible. But now you have broken that myth. It does exist. So next week I have to do a 72-hour fast so that I
it's like
can
a secret also. Level. I feel like I wonder if there's like a level 9. Like I don't know if there's like if I can unlock. We gotta speak to the guys at Keto to see if there's like an extra level that we can unlock.
We need a new level. We're here. Like what else can we get to? And what I'll say, what I loved that you did about this fast, and I've done it. I've done the same thing before because you documented it on your social media, which I think really helps with accountability and makes it a lot more fun. Okay, I don't do it because I have a lot of followers. I only have, 200, but I do it because there are people responding. They are motivated to do it, ask questions, and it really keeps you accountable. You can't start a 72-hour fast and document it and then not follow
and do it by yourself. And it's so true. And I will also say too, on my social media, on Instagram in particular, I had said, mm-hmm. any questions about fasting? And there were so many that came in that I couldn't actually answer them all. So we're going to answer some of them. Yes. Like there was a really big, majority of women, which I was very surprised to hear this, they wanted to know about endometriosis and fasting. Is there an appropriate approach? So we're going to talk about that today too.
I love that. Okay. So let's jump in. A question from beautiful Crystal. How do female hormones influence dieting and weight loss?
Oh, the short answer is hormones rule metabolism. Period. There's no like, every single time you put something into your mouth, there's going to be, you're going to account for the calories, but there's also going to be a hormonal response to that. And for women, I always make this joke. It's like hormones rule metabolism, period. Actually, especially because of your period. So we want to be thinking about as women, when we're thinking about dieting and weight loss specifically, how you can use the natural, powers that you have because you have a menstrual cycle and the ebbs and flows that occur, through the month, how you can utilize that to your advantage to be creating more energy, to be honoring your biology, and to be thinking about weight loss. So there's been quite a few questions that have come in around, I wrote an article on Medium, which I publish here and there articles. And I wrote an article on how to eat like a woman. Mm. And there's a full, I've done a full masterclass on it for my audience. So we'll actually put the link for the masterclass for people who want to hear me go into a crazy amount of detail in this. But the main concepts in terms of what I talk about, both in the article and in the masterclass, is every week, truthfully every day, but every week, if we sort of divide your cycle into 4 weeks, you have a different hormonal landscape. So for example, in the first, this week, like we were talking about just before we kind of got started, in this first week where you have your period, your body can really tolerate longer fasts. And when I say fasting, that's, longer than 24 hours. Like I think everybody should be practicing some sort of time-restricted eating, mm-hmm. which is restricting the amount of time that you consume foods during the day. But in terms of a longer than 24-hour period where you're fasting, and of course there's different ways of fasting, which we'll get into today, this is a phenomenal week for it because your progesterone levels are low, your estrogen levels are low. You can tolerate even more in terms of nutrition and a dietary protocol, very well tolerated to have a ketogenic diet where you are very much reducing the amount of carbohydrates that you're consuming on a daily basis. the first 2 weeks of your cycle, very well tolerated for that, but particularly week one. So I really love that. For week two, I call this, you know, the week before ovulation, which is actually the whole point of your period. Like, everyone thinks that your cycle is like the point of it's to bleed. And no, that's just your body saying, no, there's no pregnancy here. We gotta scratch this and start again. The whole point of your cycle is to ovulate. So, you know, I've said this before, I actually think that ovulation should be day one, but the week before ovulation, we have a couple of different things. We're starting to see the first rise of estrogen in your cycle. There's two points in your cycle where estrogen rises. So estrogen is rising. We're trying to drive the follicle to mature. So every month you mature one follicle with an egg inside it. So that is driving that growth. And we also have testosterone rising. So this is when you are, and ladies, you... A really crude measurement of whether your testosterone levels are on point is whether you're set, whether you feel horny. Mm-hmm. So the week before your ovulation, you should be trying to chase after sex, whether it's your partner, whether it's your toys that you have at home, you know, all that kind of stuff. So testosterone is going to be rising. In terms of nutrition, this is where we can be optimizing for increasing and improving our lean muscle mass. So we know that there's a direct corollary between testosterone and lean muscle mass. We want to capitalize, we want to profit off of that by going really hard in terms of our protein content. So when we're consuming higher protein, that drives something called muscle protein synthesis. So kind of just says, that kind of does what, you know, it's not a very creative word. It's like, you're just synthesizing new muscle. Mm-hmm. And you do that through consuming, the way that it starts is by, you need to have about 2 to 2.5 grams or so of leucine, which is a essential amino acid. We get that from products like meat and fish and eggs. So if we're talking about animal products, this is going to be approximately, you know, it's about 9 to 10% of animal products. So let's call it, you know, 20 to 25 grams of whey. Mm-hmm. You can get leucine, you can drive MPS with vegetarian sources. You just need a lot more. So, I don't have the reference on me right now, but if I think about soy proteins or rice proteins, which are pea proteins, which a lot of vegetarians will supplement with, you need, I think, almost double, like you need 40 grams of these vegetarian sources to be able to start driving that MPS. So the main point here, I know I'm belaboring the point here, but in week two, right before you ovulate, you want to be going harder on protein. And then we can talk about how that changes with your training as well, because you should be also changing the way that you train, the way that you are moving this week as well. So I like to talk about heavy weights, lots of resistance training. So you're getting that muscle protein synthesis, both from the chemical aspect, which is your diet through higher protein consumption, and you're also getting it mechanically. So you're getting it through the exercise, the resistance training, the heavy weights. And when I say heavy weights, ladies, I mean 5 reps, like you're struggling for that fifth, you need a spotter, because that's the kind of heavy weight that I want you to be doing. You should be sore. You should be sore the next day. So, that's kind of the week, before ovulation. And then after you ovulate, so the follicle releases the egg, and then we have like almost a completely different landscape, like the entire hormonal landscape. We are a different person. We go from being flirty and sexy, extroverted, you know, wanting sex, to, you know, the luteal phase. So the luteal phase is basically your body's like, okay, we've released the egg. Let's build up the endometrium. Let's try to wait for that sperm to fertilize the egg. Let's wait for pregnancy. So whether you want a baby or not, this happens. You know, you don't have voluntary control over this. So right, this luteal phase, we tend to see, it tends to be for some, depending on your hormonal, you know, to answer Crystal's question, you know, hormones and dieting and weight loss, this is a time where we really want to be thinking about reducing inflammation. Because if you do have any sort of premenstrual symptoms, you have tender breasts, you have bloating, you have digestion, you have mood changes, which are all sort of classified under PMS, then we will start to see that's going to happen in the second half of your cycle. So there's a couple things that we can think about from a dietary perspective when we are continuing to, we still want to be losing weight. We want to be optimizing our hormones, but I want you to just think about this idea that the second half of your cycle, you are literally building an organ.
Yeah.
You build an organ, like you build the lining of this uterus every single month. So it's energetically incredibly expensive, right? So we have changes in our protein utilization, changes in our glucose. So the amount of, we are using more proteins, using more glucose, using more free fatty acids to build up the layer of this endometrium. So you actually need more calories in the second half of your cycle, particularly in week four. In week three, what we want to be doing is we want to start increasing the consumption of cruciferous vegetables. So the brassica family, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, Brussels sprouts. I don't know if cabbage is considered in there, but I tend to like a lot of cabbage and I tend to have a lot of sauerkraut through the month. And then resistant starches as well. So a lot of the cravings that women experience in that luteal phase can be mitigated, can be ameliorated with the consumption of resistant starches. So in week three, so right after ovulation, I would be consuming it every other day. Mm-hmm. I would be probably, from a nutrition perspective, cycling the keto, like the, you know, something like the Estima diet, which we've mentioned. So the Estima diet is basically like a 28-day cycle where you're eating lots and lots of green leafy vegetables, lots of healthy fats, and sort of a moderate amount of protein. So you'd cycle between that and then a higher carbohydrate day. So in the article that we can link to in the show notes, I talk about a 2-day on, 1-day off protocol. So 2 days you're doing the Estima diet. So this ketogenic diet where you're approximately, and this is really designed for women. So it's like a 70% fat, 20% protein, 10% carbohydrate. You'll do that for 2 days. And then 1 day you'll increase your carbohydrates. You'll have like what I call a carb up day. So you can do 60, instead of doing 70, 20, 10, you might do 60, 20, 20, or you might do 50, 20, 20. Does that add up? No, that doesn't add up to 100. 50, 25, 25. There we go. That adds up to 100. Yeah. So you can just, what I'm getting at here is that you can 1 day, like you have 2 days keto, 1 day where you're cycling up your carbohydrates. That's kind of week three. And then week four is sort of do or die, right? So this is progesterone. This is the princess, the principessa. This is where she comes out. She peaks at the end of week three and at the beginning of week four. So about day 21, 22 in your cycle, progesterone reaches its peak and then it will taper off from there. So progesterone, what she's doing is she's being secreted from, I like to call the artist formerly known as the corpus of the follicle. Now it's called the corpus luteum. And she is going to be stimulating your appetite. She wants you to be eating more because, as we just mentioned, the glucose metabolism, the protein metabolism, the free fatty acid metabolism is being upregulated to develop the endometrial lining. She is going to be reducing your cervical mucus. So you may find when you're looking in your underwear, if you are watching for, we talked a little bit about mucus and cervical mucus and vaginal discharge in the last AMA. Mm-hmm. But this is like kind of the dry day. Like these are sort of like the dry days, in that week four, like leading up to your period. And we also have estrogen second rise here as well. So in this second half of your cycle, we also see estrogen rising as well. So a couple of guidelines in terms of nutrition for eating here. We want to be now consuming resistant starches every single day. So in week three, we were talking about every other day, resistant starches here every day. They feed the microbiome. They are going to, for my nerds that want to know why this is important, the microbiota in the large intestine actually use resistant starches as a substrate, as a food substrate. So they are going to gobble that up. Doesn't count towards your carbs. And then you start to, as a gift to you for feeding them, they will give you butyrate, which is a short chain fatty acid. It's going to help with the intestinal lining. So improving intestinal, hyperpermeability, if that's an issue for you. Helps with sleep, which is another common thing that women will complain of, is sleep disturbances. They feel hot, they have sweats, night sweats, that kind of thing. So resistant starches are really going to help with that. And then the other thing is that they reduce your cravings, because one of the big reasons why you're craving all those things, like the sweets and the salt and all that kind of stuff, is because your microbiome is probably starving. So daily on the resistant starches, I would increase your caloric intake 10 to 15% here. And there'd be some supplements that I'd want you to be taking as well. So glutathione, magnesium, and a nice full spectrum B vitamins as well, because those are also being gobbled up in the preparation for the for pregnancy. So Crystal, I know that was a long answer, but that would be my response to how are hormones related to fat loss and dieting.
I love it. This is such a juicy topic. I have to ask you though. Okay. So I know there's women listening to this that are saying I've gone through, I've eliminated sugar from my diet. I've done the work. I've had the keto flu. I've got myself into ketosis. And now you're asking me for certain times of the month to increase my carb intake. Yeah. Is that going to kick me out of ketosis? Is it going to be just as hard to get back in? Like, what does the woman do that has been very strict keto for so long and is almost afraid to increase the carbs to that extent?
I'm so glad you asked this, because women and men, for the record, but women in particular, we are not meant to be in ketosis all the time. So we see this in the Estima diet. They're like, oh my God, what do you mean I eat carbs? Like, no, that's going to kick me out of ketosis. I'm going to gain weight. I'm going to gain it all back. And your metabolomics are different. You have different requirements in that second half of your cycle. And if you continue to push yourself and ignore the symptom, like ignore your body's needs, your body is actually going to hold onto fat like an insurance policy, because you're not actually allowing yourself to rest and recharge. That last week of your period, of your cycle, is a time where, and I'm not asking you to have like 8,000 extra calories. It's a 10%, a 15% increase. So if you are consuming, 1,600, like I typically find in the Estima diet, women tend to end up somewhere between, let's call it 1300 calories to 1600 calories. But on the higher end of that 1600, it's just an extra 160 calories. It's like, it's an extra, Susie's Good Fat Bar. It's an extra, scoop of peanut butter. Or two scoops of peanut butter rather. It's not that many more calories, but it does serve your physiology in a way that you can recover, because building up an organ is a big deal. And then of course, in the week when you are on your period, you're shedding that organ, right? So it's important for the ladies to understand that and women in general, we are much more defensive of our fat stores than our male counterparts, right? We need fat, and we just, because we haven't, in modern society, you can just go on your phone and then food's going to show up at your door. You go to Uber Eats, or you go to whatever. But it hasn't existed like that for tens of thousands of years for us. And women will tend to pack on more adipose tissue because we need that adipose tissue to grow a baby, to grow an endometrial lining every single month. If you were to fall pregnant and there's a famine, what are you going to use? Stored food, the stored fat stores that you have. So just understanding and accepting our biology, we're not little men, right? We cannot fast and do keto and eat like men, because we're not designed that way. And if you are if that 150 calories kicks you out of ketosis for a couple of days, I mean, big shit, who cares? You're going to get back into it when you're going to be on your period soon, and you're going to do a 72-hour fast, or you're going to get back into keto, you're going to get right back into it. So it's nice to cycle the ketosis is now we're going to get an explicit rating because I said that, but beside this episode, but yeah, thank you.
I love this. Okay. Yeah. So I'm excited about this next topic, because the older I get, the more women I talk to, I realize how many women suffer from this, and it's endometriosis. So what do you have to tell them about fasting and endometriosis?
Yeah. And this came from Instagram. So I was doing the 72-hour fast, and I was jumping on my stories on Instagram stories, which, by the way, is just, I'm so out of my comfort zone doing that because I'm such a I tend to be such a private person, and then I kind of can turn it on when I need to. But it's like, oh, hi everyone, here I am again talking about my fast, and again, here I am again.
Jump on here and tell
look,
you
I'm having salt now. But a lot of women were asking about endometriosis, which shocked me. Mm-hmm. We also had, so just as a side note, we had so many questions about perimenopause and menopause. We are going to do a separate episode. So ladies that were asking about perimenopause and menopause, we're going to do a separate AMA completely on this. But for endo, endometriosis is really complicated. When we look at what it is, it looks like it's potentially an autoimmune condition. So when we look at women with endometriosis, which I'll also say, by the way, it takes an average for a woman to get the diagnosis of endometriosis 10 to 12 years, which is outrageous, because a woman will go to her primary, will be complaining about this pelvic pain, month over month. And because we as a society have normalized menstrual pain, like it's just, well, it's normal. You're just supposed to just take Midol, just take whatever. Here's some, what are those little blue pills? Is it Anaprox?
Midol. No.
Midol, but there's a prescription. I forget that, it's escaping me now. But because of menstrual pain, we almost expect it every single month. You know, women are often dismissed from their primary healthcare providers, and they have to go to doctor after doctor after doctor, which is, you know, something that I completely take a stand against. So for women with endometriosis, an average of 10 to 12 years for the diagnosis to come. And what we see is that in the blood, we see inflammatory cytokines. So when we talk about it being an autoimmune condition, one of the, some of the criteria that we look for with autoimmunity is inflammatory cytokines. And the big one is tissue-specific antibodies. So we see autoantibodies against the endometrial lining with women with endometriosis. There are a couple different theories. We can talk about LPS, the bacterial hypothesis of endometriosis, which is a lipopolysaccharide, which activates sort of inflammatory pathways in the body. But the big through line here is whether it is an autoimmune condition or it's a bacterial infection of LPS, the primary goal for a woman who suffers with endometriosis is to reduce inflammation. That's the through line. So when we think about how we can do that through fat, like the specific question was through fasting, but I'm going to answer this a little bit more for her. We can talk about fasting, but we can also talk about this through nutrition. So nutrition wise, because she has to eat at some point, she can the short answer for fasting is absolutely, it's wonderful for women with endo. But for diet, again, same, like in the same vein with my women with PCOS, the Estima method or the Estima diet, where we have a green or a lot green leafy vegetables as the base, all these green leafy vegetables reduce inflammation. So if you have, if you look at your plate and you're looking to build your plate, the question that I get my kids to answer, and this is a really good sort of metric for people to keep in mind, is where are the plants? Where is the fats? Where's the protein? The plants should make up the bed of the It should make up the majority of your plate. So it could be a bed of spinach. It could be sauteed Swiss chard, which I really love. It could be kale, which I'm also a huge fan of. And I, as a side note, make the best kale chips on the planet. Everybody who has my kale chips says so.
Yeah.
So true. Bed of plants. And then protein, when we're thinking about building protein, we want to be thinking about, I like protein to be about the size of your palm. So if you sort of look at the size of your palm, that should be about the portion. So, Mark Hyman calls this a condi meat. So I'll just take, cause I if you were to squirt ketchup on the side, it's going to be about the size of your, condiment. And then fat should be the fill. So this is basically the principles of the Estima diet. So eating a green plant-based ketogenic diet with meat. So I'm a big fan of having animal products as well for women. In terms of fasting, before we just get onto that, I just want to spend a minute talking about the greens. So when we think about why greens are really important for someone with endometriosis, we talked about the brassica family already. So these are like the mainstays of the vegetables that you're going to eat on the Estima diet. So you're going to eat things like sulforaphanes and indoles. So like the DIM that everybody talks about, indole methane, indole 3-carbinol. And the reason why this is like the royal family, like the brassica family is like it's like the Kardashians. Like they are the royal family. Like there's so many good ones. You don't know which ones are your favorite, right? That's how I feel like about the Kardashians. So same with the brassica family. There's so many good ones. I don't know who to pick. But when we talk about this, there is a direct link. So the more of these green leafy vegetables and the brassica family cruciferous vegetables you consume, there is a reduction in all-cause mortality. For women, there is a direct reduction in the mortality from cardiovascular disease, which is the number one killer for women. Everybody talks about breast cancer and everyone's scared about cancer, which of course is not, I'm not saying that that's not important, but the number one killer, most women don't realize, like that's our number one killer is heart disease. Yeah. So brassica family, more you eat, the less CVD. It does this by improving our lipid profiles, talking about cancer, reduces breast cancer risk, reduces the inflammatory pathways that we think are the accelerator for some of the symptoms of endometriosis, reduces DNA damage, all this kind of stuff. So the brassica family is wonderful for you to be eating if you do have endometriosis. And then fasting, again, the reduction in inflammation is the through line here. So we want to be reducing inflammation. Fasting does that. And if it is, in fact, an autoimmune condition, one of the ways we want to care for women with autoimmunity is by fixing their gut. A lot, you can see this through, you see this with MS, you see this with lupus, you see this with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, you see this with SLE, you see this with all these different types of autoimmune conditions, which, by the way, also run, 8 times more in the female population than it does in the male. Fact check me on that. I think it might be six or seven or eight times more. It's more in women. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's more in women. What we want here is we want to be reducing inflammation. So fasting is going to help repair the gut. It's going to help improve that hyperpermeability if there is something there. So like the 72-hour fast that I just completed, I just did a water fast. For a woman who has an autoimmune condition, she might do that if she can tolerate it. The other option for her might be having bone broth. So a bone broth fast. So she can be sipping on bone broth through the day rather than just doing the water. Like a water fast is a more aggressive kind of fast. Like what I just did is a bit more aggressive. But the nice thing about bone broth, and when we think about this in conjunction with the gut and helping heal the gut, the intestinal wall is made of primarily of epithelial cells, and they have a really short lifespan. They turn over every 3 days, 4 days, every 5 days. Bone broth, when you're sipping on bone broth for 3 days and that's the only thing that you're consuming, it's really rich in glutamine, which is an amino acid. And that is going to feed those epithelial cells in the intestinal wall, and they're going to gobble that up and use it for energy. So it has been glutamine has been shown to improve intestinal permeability because we're helping the quality of the epithelial cells that live there. And then we also have the gelatin to help strengthen the mucosal layer in the gut as well. So love for a woman who has endo, either if she can tolerate it. And of course you'd be doing this with your primary healthcare provider, either a non-caloric liquid fast like I just did, so herbal teas, salt water, or a bone broth fast. And you can do it for 2-3 days. And I think that, and even, you know, for a woman with endo, it's like when she has her period, it's like there's like shrapnels exploding in her uterus. So that another really great time to do that would be in her bleed week, in the time where she has her period.
Whew, that was a good answer. What a good way for her to get her power back too, after, you know, waiting for a diagnosis and being kind of shot around the medical community, to be able to make those changes every single month and take that back, that power by fasting and deciding what she puts in her body. So
yeah. And it's, you know, I will just say I'm writing a book right now, as you know, and this is like the stories of women that I've worked with, the women that I talk to. It always is like that. Women are, their symptoms are often discounted, or they're offered as a first line, some sort of medication. And it's usually like, if you listen to my episode with Dr. Jolene Brighton, it's like the first thing for anything is the birth control pill. And you know, a lot of women on endometriosis, they're offered that as a way to control their symptoms. And you know, if you want to kind of go down the rabbit hole in terms of why that may not be the right way, listen to those two episodes. We did an AMA on the birth control pill as well. There's always going to be conventional interventions, like, you know, surgical excision of the wounds in the woman's endometrial lining. I know there's, I believe it's the Minera IUD that is often also used as a prophylactic for women. So you can do these conventional things, you know, especially the surgery. Like, we've had a couple of patients in the practice with severe endo who went through surgery and were successful, but you also have to pair it with some of these lifestyle things, because we always want to be thinking about reducing the inflammatory pathways for these women.
Okay. So the next question is about another hot topic, but honestly, this is a topic that I've only heard men discuss, or men give feedback on the great results that they've had. So this is from Sarah, and she asks, in regards to diet, I'd love to hear your take on carnivore for women. Mm. Also, diet guidelines for those who carry the APOE4 gene?
APOE4.
Stoked to learn more about Estima Diet. She signed up for your masterclass.
Oh, amazing. All right. So you don't need to click on the link in the show notes, because you've probably already seen it. But what we're, so carnivore is basically nose to, done right, it's like nose to tail. You're eating the meat of the animal, you are eating the organs of the animal, you're, you know, grinding up the joints, and you're, you know, consuming those as well. It is a subset, if you will, of the ketogenic diet. You are having zero carbohydrates, none. All you're consuming is fat and protein. I am incredibly bullish on sauna as a therapy for recovery, heart health, and overall aging well. I personally decided on an infrared sauna from Sunlighten because of the range of far wavelengths and near infrared wavelengths that it offers. Saunas help with detoxification and rejuvenation to rid your body of toxins. It helps with heart health by improving circulation, reducing blood pressure, and helping keep the arteries supple. It helps with muscle recovery by easing the tension and soreness to recover faster. And of course, stress reduction. With the warmth and the relaxation of sitting in a sauna, it's crucial for hormonal balance and achieving a state of well-being necessary for a strong physique and a strong mind. If you visit sunlighten.com/better and use code better to get a discount, that is sunlighten, sunlighten.com/better, and use code better at checkout. Now, in terms of autoimmunity, women that I have spoken to who have done carnivore have found this to be life-changing. And of course, they've done it against all advice that they've been given. And we see that their symptoms go into remission. Because once you actually have an autoimmune condition, you always will have it. Like, the gene's been turned, like, it's there. But what you can do is you are either having a flare-up or it's in remission. So a lot of women who have tried carnivore have noticed that their symptoms will improve drastically, and they will go into remission. Now, the issue with it, in terms of when we think about whether this is an evidence-based protocol over the long term, like short term, a therapeutic intervention like nutritional ketosis, which is what these women are going into with carnivore, seems to be very beneficial. And I have heard it enough times for me not to discount it. And I am not the type of doctor who's going to discount any woman's story. You tell me what's happening for you. You are a better doctor for your body than I ever could be. So there's that piece of it. The other, when I'm looking at what constitutes evidence-based practice, one obviously is the clinical experience that you have. The other thing is what's available in the literature. And then the third piece, if there's like a Venn diagram, is going to be the patient's goals and dreams. And taking those three things together is what constitutes evidence-based medicine and evidence-based protocols. So I always like to try to educate people who just are like, well, there's no PubMed study on it. Like there's no, it's like, you know, you have absolutely like for you to be hanging on to PubMed, like it's the be all and end all. And don't get me wrong. I go down rabbit holes on that website. Like it is like, you know, you go, whenever I go to Google and it's like a new tab, like the first little thing where it's like frequently, you know, visited things, it's like PubMed's like the first. I love PubMed, but you also have to take into account clinical experience, which is often forgotten, and the patient's wishes. So with carnivore right now, at the time of this recording, as far as I'm aware, there are no long-term studies on it. So, you know, many women have talked about this being a game changer for them for putting these symptoms into remission. There has been no good quality studies on it to date. I hope that that will change. And maybe there is a, you know, the other piece to that is that what we do actually have a lot of literature on is the efficacy and the benefits of consuming plants. So when we think about, okay, so she's on carnivore, she's saying she feels really, really good on it. Can we get her on carnivore? You know, my thinking around this is the following, and this is like the application of information, which so many like online bullies have, like they're like, there's no PubMed and it's, you have no clinical experience to be talking. So just sit down and stay in your lane. So, you know, I just felt like I needed to say that. But for women with autoimmunity, we have this idea that if she's tried it and it's working for her, maybe we cycle it. Maybe we get her on carnivore. She stays there for a month or two. We are monitoring her blood work. And then as her intestinal permeability is improving, as the stagnation in her liver is improving and her ability to detoxify is improving, and as her symptoms get better, then we can start slowly introducing green leafy vegetables, that Kardashian, the brassica family that we were talking about. I don't know where I came up with that, but it's like, they're like the royal family. But anyway, so now then we maybe start for a couple, you know, again, like another cycle of a month or two where we're putting plants into her diet and seeing how she's responding, monitoring her blood, monitoring her hormonal status, et cetera. And then maybe there's a cycling that happens over many years. I mean, truthfully, I don't have the answer here. Mm-hmm. What I do know is that a lot of people say it works. We just don't know how long it's good for. So, I hope that that's helpful. Like there's like a lot of thinking and a lot of clinical application and ways that we can play with carnivore. But right now I don't know what the long-term effects of never having plants again would be. Right. Yeah.
I laugh when you mention the PubMed, cause I just read the manuscript for your book and I think you reference your student subscription that you had. So yeah. This is like a decade's worth of reading that you've done.
Yeah. And just because you go on PubMed, by the way, like this is just me being like a little bit of a, just because you can search on PubMed doesn't mean that you know how to read the articles. So we'll just, I mean, that's another, I'll just get off my soapbox and we can just move on from there. But okay. Yeah. Let's keep going.
All right.
So I did talk about APO. Did she ask about APOE4?
Yes, she did.
Ah, okay. Let me actually talk about that. So APOE4, apolipoprotein, apolipoprotein E, she's talking about a SNP or a variation. Most people are APOE3s. So there's two, we have two genes. We get one from mom, one from dad. Most of us are 3-3s. If you have a 4 SNP, this increases the likelihood for Alzheimer's and cardiovascular disease. So it puts you at more risk for atherosclerosis, decrease in brain volume. You do not process cholesterol and fats the way that you should. You have altered a lipid metabolism. So when we think about an APOE4, someone who has APOE4, the most researched diet is the Mediterranean diet, which is to say, you know, when we think about Southern Italy, we think about Greece, we think about Portugal, we think about Spain. These communities, these populations tend to eat lots of olive oil. God knows my grandmother cooked, like she moisturizes her skin with olive oil and I've taken that from her. So olive oil over everything. Omega-3 fatty acids, fish, nuts, fruits, my goodness, and vegetables. This is very well researched to be a good diet for people with the polymorphism, with the APOE4 polymorphism. So for this woman in particular, consuming a lot of omega-3s is going to be important in the form of polyunsaturated fatty acids. So either a supplement, and I can link to the supplement that I often will recommend for people and the one that I take every day. It's a high potency omega-3. So it has the DHA and the EPA in it. Vitamin D, very important for these, for this population as well. So when we look at the studies, you know, there's like both high and low levels of vitamin D, and depending on whether you have one SNP or two of the APOE4, you can either have low or high. These levels, like too high or too low, are associated with lower cognitive function. So you need to have like the Goldilocks vitamin D levels here. You have to find the levels that are just right for you. And, I guess the other, is there anything else I would add with APOE4? It would be basically following like a Mediterranean style diet, making sure you're getting lots of healthy oil, omega-3s, pardon me. And that could be fish oil, that can be krill. You can find it in fatty fish, like the smash fish. So sardines, let me see if I can remember this acronym. Sardines, mackerel, anchovies, salmon, and herring?
I think it's herring.
Yeah. The smash fish.
All right. Okay. So Terry wrote us a question. It is so detailed. Terry, thank you for taking the time to write this. So she's been on keto for 14 months. She's lost 20 kilos without even trying. Blood pressure returned to normal, came off the contraceptive pill and antidepressants. Energy increased. Arthritis pain disappeared. Period cycles normal for the first time in her life. She felt amazing.
Awesome.
The last few months, however, my appetite is almost uncontrollable. I absolutely have to eat about 2 to 3 times more than I was eating the first 10 months on keto, to the point where I've regained 8 kilos in the last 4 months. Increased appetite is all through the month. I also have almost daily constant cravings for chocolate, which I've never had before. Tried increasing carbs, no better, maybe hungrier. Tried increasing fat, not much difference. Tried increasing protein, no difference either. I also used to be able to fast 4 days every few months. Now I can barely do 18 hours. I feel full after I eat, but I'm starving. Still strictly keto, 100% clean, no other changes to my diet or lifestyle, and I've already been including resistant starches a couple times a month. I'm a 41-year-old female. Is this common? Why might this be happening? What can I do to get back on track and get the weight off? Thank you.
Aww,
and she sent 3 kisses. Kiss.
Three kisses. All right. So good on you for the first, looks like that 14 months, lost 20 kilos, came off, you know, contraception and antidepressants. So what we can see, I don't know at what point she came off those medications, but I just want to make a note here that when you come off the pill, when you come off antidepressants, there can be a rebound effect in terms of the reasons why you may have gone on, the reasons why you initially went on those medications. When you come off of them, it's like the symptoms get so much worse. And I will, if you think about it, if I took you now and I duct taped your mouth and I threw you in the back of a trunk and, you know, you were there for however long. And then once I took you out and I took the mask off, you'd be screaming at me, right? You'd be like, "Mom, how could you do that?" So it's the same sort of scenario, right? If you have been muting these symptoms through things like oral contraception or antidepressants, those things can rebound once you get off those medications because the root cause is not quite fixed yet. So a couple of things to consider. As you were talking, I was just writing some notes here. So if she's constantly craving chocolate, and she was on, I don't know how long she was on the pill for, but we want to be thinking about supplementing with things like magnesium, because that's often a really big, even for women in their normal menstrual cycle, when we crave chocolate, part of it is because we are magnesium deficient. And this is, I'm writing about this in the book, like when we think about the main deficiencies that women tend to experience, it's vitamin D and magnesium. So magnesium would be something I would start supplementing with that can also, magnesium is used in everything, everywhere, all the time. You need magnesium. Most women are deficient in it because we have this. And she's 41, so she still has her menstrual cycle, hopefully. A full spectrum B vitamin is something I would also recommend for her as well as B12, because we know that the pill, oral contraception, like it just gobbles up B12, uses up so much B12. So we need her on a B12 and magnesium. Her symptoms are kind of, sounds like she has some gut dysbiosis in there. So she's always like always absolutely starving. I know she's mentioned that she's using, I think she said, I've used resistant starches here and there over the past couple of months. Mm-hmm. I would actually start using them every other day to every day.
Right. Yeah. She said only a couple times a month. So I think that she should.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Until you start, I mean, resistant starches. So when we talk about resistant starches, we're talking about green banana flour. We're talking about green plantain flour. We're talking about raw potato starch. I would start there before going into like the cold sushis, the cold rice, the cold potatoes, but go to those things first, have that in your water every single day and do that for 2 weeks. See if that helps. So you should start to see an improvement at the 2 to 3 week mark of supplementing with resistant starches every single day. And the other thing, again, to be coming back to Jolene, it sounds like she has what Jolene has coined post-birth control syndrome. So when we get off the pill, I mean, the pill affects every single system in our body, right? It can cause GI distress. It can cause thyroid issues. It can cause HPA axis dysfunction. So the communication between your brain, your pituitary gland and your adrenals, it can be a trigger for autoimmunity. So coming off the pill can actually be a trigger for autoimmunity. So things like MS we see and Hashimoto's and all these things happening when women get off the pill. And we also see things like, HSCRP, so high sensitivity C-reactive protein, 3 times higher in women coming off the pill. So there's a lot of, she sounds inflamed. So I would be thinking about how she can be reducing that with the resistant starches, like we talked about, the magnesium and the B vitamins, pardon me. And I would also be thinking about movement, because movement, while, you know, when we're thinking about resistance training and exercise, while in the short term, it can be a little pro-inflammatory, over the long term, it is very much an anti-inflammatory proxy for reducing inflammatory pathways in the body. So, and it's also more effective than any antidepressant. It's been shown in multiple studies, and I'll make sure to link in the show notes that exercise has been shown to be just as effective as SSRIs. I believe there was one done in SNRIs. So it is just as effective, if not more effective, because you actually don't, I would argue they're more because you don't have to deal with the side effects that come from those medications. And of course, that's a conversation you need to have with your primary. I don't want you to just stop taking your antidepressants tomorrow, but thinking about incorporating exercise and making it a habit so that you reduce your reliance in the medication over time. Because that's actually the point of meds, right? The point of the meds is to hold you over temporarily while you kind of get things back in check.
And it sounds like she's been doing keto on like very strictly. So maybe she needs to think about eating based on her menstrual cycle. I would say watch Dr. Stephanie's masterclass. It's going to be, right?
Yeah. Watch the we'll link for the masterclass in the show notes, Terry. So, you can watch that. You can watch how you can eat in accordance with your menstrual cycle. Cause you're 41. You want to be thinking about maybe not quite there yet, but in the drop zone for perimenopause as well.
Okay. Next question is from Paula. I also think this is a great question. Mm. It's a clarifying question. With respect to diet, I keep hearing avoid processed foods. And to be honest, I'm a bit confused by this term and what categories of foods are entering here. For example, are feta cheese or Parmigiano in this category? Would be really great to go deeper on the meaning of the subject. For me personally, every food is processed unless you eat vegetables. And then I listened to your previous podcast and some others related with health. This term is used all over and it is quite a big difference between European diet and American diet, which I am completely unfamiliar with. But what I hear in podcasts must suck.
I bet she's from Europe. She can't, because if she's in North America, be like, that's the normal stuff. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah.
Please bring some light into my confusion. Thanks a lot.
Okay. So, Paula, if you are lucky enough to live in Europe, one of the things that you have the benefit of is the name Parmigiano. So I'm going to get my Italian on here. Parmigiano Reggiano. It is a protected term. So in the same way that medical doctor is like you, I can't walk around saying I'm a medical doctor. I'm not, But in the same, you know, I'm a chiropractor. That is a protected term. You can't just walk around saying you're a chiropractor. Parmigiano Reggiano. This is how amazing the Europeans are. That is a protected term. So the only place that you can, you know, call the cheese Parmigiano is, I think it's the region in Parma. There's a couple different, I think it's Parma and it may be, I can't remember. There's another area. The only thing that you can have there is unpasteurized milk and salt. That's it. Mm-hmm. In America, in good old America, and in Canada, across North America, really, it is not a protected term. So we can see all sorts of names that sort of suggest that it is this high quality protected term, but it is not. So things like
Kraft shaky cheese.
Yeah, exactly. So Kraft shaky cheese, Parmesan, you can call it Parmesan, Parmigiana, Parmesana, you know, real Parma, all these things that denote that, that make you, it's like a marketing gag. It like makes you think that it's Parmigiano Reggiano, but it's not. So, and it's funny because, there was the ruling in Europe, once they decided that this was going to be a protected term, Kraft had to change, like that Kraft shaky cheese that you were talking about, they had to change the name to, it was like Parmesito or something, or Parmesilo or something. Like they had to change the name completely, in Europe, because now this was like this designated, it's only in the region of Parma, it only contains unpasteurized milk, all this kind of stuff. So, and also with feta cheese, it's the same thing. So feta cheese is, it's made from sheep's milk and it's basically, what's the word I want to use? It's just stored in salty brine basically. Brine. So it's like a pickled cheese. That's what I'm trying to say. It's almost like it sits in this brine and it sort of cures over time. So it becomes saltier and saltier the more, you know, the longer that it ages. So processed food is really fake food. So feta is a real food. It's just the curation method that's different. Parmigiano, it's just the curation that's different. But processed food, when I say that, what I'm talking about is frankenfoods. I'm talking about processed meats. Processed, you know, anytime you're not in the perimeter of the grocery store and you're going in the aisles and you see the Wheat Thins and the Triscuits and you see the boxed whatever, those are processed because they don't grow in the ground, they don't grow on a tree, they don't roam the land and they don't swim. So that's what I would call processed. And unfortunately in North America, this is why we call it SAD, Standard American Diet, because we primarily eat our foods that are processed, that don't occur naturally in nature. There's a lot of preservatives, there's a lot of additives, trans fats, all these things that are added to these foods.
Pam is asking, after numerous failed relationships and years of being single, how to enter the dating scene again and not using apps? Exclamation mark. Mm-hmm. Being confident in your body, even after gaining a large amount of weight due to meds prescribed by doctor and not being able to release it over the years.
Oh, Pam, what a good question. Okay. So there's a couple ways we can answer this. First, I just want, when I hear this question, I want you to, the first thing we want to do before we talk about medication and how medication causes weight gain and all that, you just have to give yourself permission to love yourself. So you are the same person now, heavier than you were, you know, when you were lighter and not on these medications. You have the same quirks, you have the same beauty within you, you have, you know, and on the dark side, you have the same triggers, you have the same shadow. You are the same person. It is just your composition is different now. So I would argue that I know you want to get back into the dating scene and I think that's amazing, but the most important relationship I want you to be harnessing is the one that you have with yourself, because that's the most important one you're ever going to have. You know, if we are looking to our partners to complete us, like I hate that Jerry Maguire scene where it's like, you complete me. It's like, I want to just choke her. Cause you know, you have to, nobody completes you except yourself. I want you to, you know, you won't be able to love someone fully if you haven't fallen in love with yourself yet. So I just wanted to say that. The other thing I would like to just mention is numerous failed relationships is an opportunity to grow and to learn again, to fall in love with yourself and to learn more about yourself. You know, how did they fail? Why did they fail? How were you triggered in those relationships? What wounds were being activated, you know, when there was potentially fights or there was discourse in the relationship or maltreatment? What are some of the things that you need to focus on and do inner work to be able to heal those things? And how can we actively find out what those wounds are, sit with those wounds, and kind of get to know them and become friends with them? Because I think a lot of times we all have wounds. I have wounds. I have, you know, I have failed relationships as well. You know, I haven't really talked about it very publicly, but, you know, went through a divorce several years ago, very difficult time for me and my family. And I think that what it has given me and continues to give me, it's a gift that continues to give, is for me to be able to reflect on that relationship and say, how did I not show up as my best self for this man? You know, how was I not the ideal partner for him? What are some ways that we would feed off each other's, you know, wounds? And I think that I would offer and invite you to look at that for your failed relationships as well, because it's an opportunity for you to learn more about yourself. So in terms of meds, I just want to kind of, you know, switching subjects a little bit, and I'm sure there'll be more questions that come from there, come from that. But when we think about medication, know that there are many ways that meds can mess up your metabolism. They can stimulate your appetite, which is going to make you hungrier and eat more. It can affect the way, the speed at which you burn calories. So it's going to affect your metabolomics. It's going to affect the way your body stores and utilizes glucose or sugars in the body. It can cause you to hold water, so you're going to be more puffy. It can cause you to have shortness of breath. There's when you watch those drug commercials and there's like everyone's laughing and smiling, but then you hear like the low male voice. It's like, symptoms may include shortness of death. You know, like you have, like many medications can cause shortness of breath. So a couple of meds, I don't know what she's on. She hasn't mentioned it in the question, but diabetic medication like insulin can cause you to gain weight, antipsychotics, antidepressants, epileptic medication, steroid hormones like the birth control pill, like we talked about, prednisone, and statins, blood pressure reducing medications, beta blockers, that kind of thing. So the good news is that it's not your fault, right? It's probably the medication. The tough love that I'm going to give you is it's still your responsibility to be living a life that is in harmony with your genes and your lifestyle. So it's still, even though it's the meds that are causing the weight gain, I would invite you to still think about how you can be maximizing your cellular potentiality by eating foods that are anti-inflammatory, by moving your body, and by releasing the, what sounds like some emotional trauma, whether that's big trauma, big T or little T, from your past. And I think that all of those things are, I mean, that's not just your responsibility. It's everyone's responsibility to be working on those three pillars. And that's kind of what I want to say about that. What do you think, Major? I feel like you have some good insight in terms of dating. I always follow your life vicariously in your dating.
So you have your 22 pages of notes and references. I have my half page of single girl notes here.
I love it. Yeah.
Pam, welcome. I am the president of the single girl committee, and I am here to tell you that it's actually really exciting. Getting back into the dating world means it's just full of possibility. And I think that you should really fall in love with the process that you're about to embark on. Dating without the apps is definitely for extroverts. So if you are an introvert, you are going to need to say yes to so many more things than you typically would. That's my number one tip. So if you're invited to something and you normally would say no, now you have to go. So if it's your... You have to now. It's your best friend who's saying, you know, hey, why don't you come to my son's hockey tournament? It's at, you know, you have to say yes, because you never know who the coach is going to be, who's going to be another parent. You have to make yourself available to the different possibilities of meeting new people. What else do I have in my notes? You are going to be joining new classes. Join an improv class, a woodworking class, a soccer team. There are soccer teams that you can join as an individual. You don't already have to create the team and go on it. You can, it's everyone joining as an individual. So you're going to do that. You're going to start asking people in conversations what personal projects are they most excited about right now. Okay. Ooh, you're going to ask people that
question.
And when they ask you that question in return, because that's how polite conversation works, you are going to talk positively about this new quest that you're on. You're going to tell them that you are really excited, that you've been on this journey of self-discovery, and you're now really excited and interested in meeting someone, and you're going to describe the person that you envision or want to meet. So that the person who's listening to you can say, hey, you know who that reminds me of? This reminds me of so-and-so, let me connect you. So you're just going to start talking about the your new quest to find a love and smile and be excited. I also had the idea of maybe hosting weekly dinner parties. So every week for 3 months, you could invite, or every 2 weeks for 6 months, you could invite 3 to 5 people over to your home. And the only rule is that they have to bring one other person with them that isn't a partner. So that's a great, isn't that good? That's
good. I like that.
Yeah. So that way you are not only spending more time with the people that are meaningful to you or getting creative with who you're inviting over to the house, you're giving them the opportunity to bring someone else over and meet new interesting people. And at the very least, you are just going to have some great dinner parties, but there might be a potential love match there. Okay, this is one of my other tips. You are going to find a couple of your your extroverted girlfriends, the girlfriends that love to go out and meet new people, and you're going to get their help. But the important thing is that you make it really clear, because the thing I don't like is when girls make plans to go out together, but then my girlfriend's always looking at who else is in the room. So you're going to let them know, hey, we're going to go to this charity gala. We're going to go to this dinner party. We're going to go to this. And I would really love it if you would help me meet new people, make conversation with people. So you're going to let them know that they are your meet new people wingman. That way they just don't feel like, oh, she asked me to hang out, but really she just wanted someone with her while she like scoped the scene. Okay. Now I noticed that you put the exclamation mark after not using the apps.
I was going to say, yeah. Yes. I think I know where you're going here.
So this is really funny. I was talking to my daughter last night. She's 15 and we were talking about doing the podcast and, how excited I was. And she asked me, well, what question are you most excited about? And I told her about this question. I told her about the apps. And I said, back in the day, people were really, there was a stigma and people would make up different reasons how they actually, you know how people would be like, oh yeah, no, we actually met at a bookstore, but really they had met on a dating app. Mm-hmm. Haley was blown away. She was like, what? Like that was a world she couldn't even imagine. To her, she's like, but that's how everyone meets. Like, isn't that safer? Can't you learn more about them before going out than meeting someone? So I promise you, this is how people are meeting. People are meeting on dating apps, and you don't have to make up a silly reason of how you met.
So what apps would you recommend for her? Yeah. If she's going to say, okay, I'm going to listen to this podcast and I'm going to get out of my comfort zone and download an app, which are there ones that you like more than others?
Yes. And you're only going to do one. You're not going to download all of the apps and be overwhelmed. You are going to download one of the apps, and one of the ones that I would recommend would either be Hinge or Bumble. And you're going to do these because men can't, or women, whoever you're interested in, can't just message you. You have to show interest in their profile or message them first before they can write you back. So I think what happens with women, they download, you know, Tinder or something, and they just get overwhelmed and bombarded by
gross pictures. And
yeah, and you're just like, what's going on? This is too much. So you're just going to do one app. You're going to invite one of your best girlfriends over for dinner. You're going to cook a lovely meal. You're going to listen to some sexy R&B music, and you're going to create your profile together and you're going to post it. That way you have someone there that's with you, that's excited. You won't feel alone. Like, it'll just feel comfortable. And then you're going to use it as a tool, but not the tool. So it's just something that you use every once in a while. You're still putting yourself out there, but it, people are on there, man. I'm on there and I'm checking out there. Like, even I go higher on the age range, like there's all ages on there now. And I think it would be something that, if you're getting back into the dating game, it'll give you a lot of practice, because there's nothing worse than, you know, not going on a date for 3 months and then all of a sudden you have a date to go on. You're just really anxious and nervous. Right. But if you're setting up these little 15-minute, 30-minute coffee date, let's go to a bookstore is such a good date, like to just see what, you know, what kind of things they're interested in. But short little dates that are convenient for you to go to, that are with new people that you haven't met before, I think is a really great way to get back into the dating world. And you know what? I've done this before. I've been on a date with someone but I've said, you know what? I have this friend that I think that you guys would be so perfect for. And that could happen to you. You could just be meeting new people and they could have people that come to mind that would be perfect for you. And if all else fails and it's the worst thing in the absolute world and you hate it and you can't be on the dating app anymore, then you delete it.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love that. That's so good. That's incredible. So she's going to do Bumble or Hinge. And then she's going to, you know, do these dinners where she's saying friends and friends of friends. Mm-hmm. And she's going to start saying yes in her life.
Hey, yes. Yeah. Be excited. This is an exciting time in your life. And like I said, the possibility is what's really exciting. You're not in a scenario. You're like creating your new love and relationship scenario. So I think it's an exciting time. And I would love an update, Pam.
You have to update us. You must update us because we can have fun. We have some good girlfriend chats with this one. Yeah.
No. Yeah. And I think the two of us, with you, with your, you know, committed, awesome, loving relationship, and me with my 37-year-old single status, I think we could have some really fun conversations around relationships and dating and sex.
100%.
Okay. So our next question is from Nikki. Nikki is asking for rituals. What are some examples from your own life of things you do daily, weekly, monthly, etc.? What do you do, recommend for yourself? And what do you like to do with your partner, with your family, or with your family?
Oh, this is a good question. I have written about this. I've been talking about morning routines for years. I've been trying to, you know, when I was in chiropractic practice, I would be talking about setting up your day for success. And I talk about it now. I write about it now. It's going to be part of the book. So, couple things. There can be so many permutations of what your morning routine can be. 5 minutes. Your morning routine could be an hour and a half. You know, it really just depends. And some days my morning routine very much ebbs and flows based on, you know, usually I'm sneaking out of the bed in the morning and going downstairs and doing my workout. And if my kids wake up early, then my workout gets cut short. So it really just ebbs and flows on the day. But there's a couple of pillars that happen every single day with me, no matter what, with a morning routine. The first is what I like to call water with benefits, just kind of piggybacking on the dating question that we were just talking about. So when you wake up, you're dehydrated. You have not had any liquid. You've not had any food. You've been fasting effectively while you've been sleeping. So rehydration with water. So about a quart of water, or about, you know, for my American friends, a quart, or for the rest of the world, about a liter of water in the morning. And I often will put electrolytes in it. So an electrolyte blend, which has sodium, potassium, a couple other good things in there, magnesium, chloride, etc. So we'll link in the show notes the blend that I use, but you can also just put some salt in your water if you don't have an electrolyte blend, like a nice Himalayan, not table salt, but like Himalayan salt. That's the first thing. So quart of water, liter of water. Second thing is movement. So this is the big variable depending on how much time you have. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have 10 minutes and sometimes it's, you know, three songs and I just dance my heart out. And then that's kind of my movement for the day. Or if my kids stay asleep or they're with their dad, I have a bit more flexibility in the morning. So I will do my favorite thing to do is to work out fasted. So I don't eat before I work out, and I'll either get on my bike. And I love Zwift. So if anybody wants to be friends with me on Zwift, I have no friends on there. I just go and I have like, I have no friends on there. It's the weirdest thing. Anyway, Zwift, and then, or resistance training. So, you know, I talk about, you know, me in resistance training, I love my weights. So I love to do both of those fasted. And when we think about why that's important. There's a couple of reasons for it. One, you're starting your day off by activating areas in the brain. So when you are moving, you are activating areas in the frontal lobe called the motor cortex, which is basically an area that helps with movement. That's located in the frontal lobe. Your frontal lobe is involved in emotional regulation, is involved in future thinking, planning for the future, executive decision-making, etc. So when you are activating the frontal lobe, you are actually setting yourself up for better cognition through the day. So you're going to be more focused when you're doing your cognitive work, whether that's, you know, at work or at home. It is going to set you up for better emotional regulation, so better resilience when things, you know, hit the fan. And it's going to help you plan. So that's a really, and I love movement in the morning because it just kind of wakes your body and your brain up. You know, you've been lying, you know, relatively inactive, right, overnight. And I just love movement in the morning because I find it just opens me up and allows me to be really focused. The other thing for those of you that, you know, want to piggyback on the last AMA, we were talking a lot about cortisol. Your cortisol awakening response is highest in the 15 to 30 minutes after you wake up. So cortisol, as we discussed on the last AMA, it's a counter-regulatory hormone, meaning that it opposes insulin. So insulin's job is to get glucose and substrate, primarily glucose, into the cell, and cortisol wants to keep it around. So what you can do is, if you're doing resistance training or you're doing cardio, is you are now utilizing your leg muscles or your upper body muscles or whatever. So you're going to help drive the blood glucose into the muscles. So you're going to have extra blood glucose in the morning, and that's going to drive it into the muscles. And, you know, the way that I like to remember this is in the same way that, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Once the glucose gets into the muscles, they stay there. They cannot get out because they don't have the phosphatase. Like you can't get glucose out of the muscle once it's in there. So those are kind of one and two. So it's, you know, water with some salt or some electrolytes. It's movement, however much movement you have time for. And then the third thing is cold. I call this cold tatas. You know, you get into the shower and you take a freezing, like it's cold. There's no heat on. And all honesty, when I first started this, I hated this more than anything, but I was doing a lot of research on Wim Hof. I was looking at mitochondrial biogenesis. I was looking at energy. And all roads pointed to cryotherapy. So I don't want to go somewhere to stand in a cryotherapy machine for, you know, 2 minutes. Like it's just a completely inefficient use of my time. I'm a mother. I have no time. I can't like drive somewhere to go for 2 minutes and come home. So I was like, okay, I'll use my shower. So I started off doing 1 minute of hot shower. And then the last minute of my shower, I turned off the heat. And now I basically do the entire shower cold. So, that's not a long time. Like if you speak to my partner, Giovanni, he could spend all day in the shower, and he would, if you let him. For me, it's like, I got the shampoo, rinse, conditioner. And then while the conditioner is on, I'm shaving, I'm, you know, scrubbing my body, and then I'm out. So like we're talking 7 minutes at the most. So I take a 7 minute cold shower. That's kind of my morning routine. There are other things that I can add into it, but that's basically the three things I make sure I do all the time: freezing, cold water, movement, and rehydration. In the evening, it's all about my mental health. So for me, I find this with women, I find this with myself. There's an inverse relationship between my anxiety and the amount of light that's outside. So as the light goes down, my anxiety levels tend to creep up. I start thinking about all the things that went wrong that day, all the things that can potentially go wrong tomorrow, you know, where I'm failing, you know, that's just sort of a mental game. So what I will do is things like journal. So where did I win today? What went right? What am I grateful for? I write up my to-do list for tomorrow. We have a daily, you know, morning meeting with the team. So I prepare for that. If I can get a sauna in the evening, I feel like I've won. So depending on the kids, if I can get into the sauna around 6:30 and sit there for an hour, that's like the perfect, you know, 6:30 to 7:30. I'm kind of sweaty, you know, all warm when I get out. But then there's a rebound where like that reduces my core body temperature. Mm-hmm. And that really helps me get a really nice sleep. So I like to do that as well.
Okay. I want to hear three things that you do when things are not going right. Do you have any rituals that you do whenever...
Yeah. And that's like, that's a really juicy question, because it's really easy to be like, oh, well, I just have my water and I work out and I do it all the time. But for me, my kids will wake up in a funk, I'll wake up in a funk, all that kind of stuff. So my main strategy here is, if you've listened to the Jennifer Kalari episode, I basically Kalari myself. So she talks about the calm technique. I will be like, oh, I know, dear, you're just feeling like, oh, poor thing. You know, the way you feel, I will Kalari myself. So I will, you know, validate the feelings that I'm feeling. That helps me calm down. And I will often pull tarot cards as well. So there's a one particular deck that I am just obsessed with. No affiliation, but it's called Sacred Rebels. I will always pull it. I don't know how it happens, but I always pull the right card. So those are kind of the things that I do when I'm in a bad mood. And then once I can kind of get over myself, then I'll kind of get into the other things I described.
Oh, I love that. Okay, I'm going to give you two or three of mine. One of them is I have a really hard time journaling whenever I'm in a little bit of a funk. So one thing I've started doing is using my voice recording app. And instead of writing things down, I put a timer on for 10 or 20 minutes. And the only rule is you can't stop talking and you can't turn the voice recorder off. So instead of writing how I'm feeling out, I just do kind of stream of consciousness, talk it out to myself. Meditations, Sam Harris, waking up app. I love,
his voice is meant for meditations.
It's
velvet.
It gets me in there deep. Yeah. I also love Michael Seeley. He does hypnosis meditations and he has a ton of YouTube videos. And this last one is something that you and I both do, and it's called cord cutting.
Oh, and yes.
Sometimes it's as simple as you and I just doing it's a little snip and that's all I need to do, cut the emotion. Or sometimes I'll go into a meditation on the cord cutting, but those seem to be very effective for me.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. For those of you who want to continue on this week's Geeky Magic Carpet Ride with me, visit bettershow.co/show notes. You'll find research, links, summary notes, musings that I prepared in preparation for the podcast, and I often throw in some of my best practices, bonuses, and links. All the juicy bits are in there for you. And now for the obligatory legal and medical disclaimer. This podcast is for general information only, and the advice recommendations we discuss do not replace medicine, chiropractic, or any other primary healthcare provider's advice, treatment, or care. In the consumption of this podcast, there is no doctor-patient relationship formed, and the use and implementation of the information discussed are at the sole discretion of the listener. The information and opinions shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. This episode is brought to you by yours truly, Dr. Stephanie Estima, and Leverage. Leverage handles all production, creates the images that you see on my social media, and takes out all my awkward pauses. They are my secret magic bullet. You can visit them at getleverage.com/better.